the Empowered Caregiver Show, where we uplift caregivers through education and support while also lifting up their invaluable role in society. I'm Kristen.
And I'm Liza.
And together we are the Empowered Caregivers. Today we're here with Jessica Cannon, a speaker, author, and caregiver advocate.
Welcome, Jessica. Can you please give us a little background on yourself and your personal caregiving experience?
Sure. Thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here. I would have never called myself a caregiver before, but years ago, I was doing the things that we are taught to do. I went to school. I went and got a couple of degrees. I started a career, I got married, had some kids, started a family. Life was good. And then I started noticing some changes in my mother. And when I noticed them, they were inconvenient. They were not at the right time. They were frustrating because I didn't know how to respond to it. I didn't want to respond to it. So I dismissed a lot of it. Time kept rolling and I had to step back in at a certain point where I realized I had to become more of a parent to her than I intended to become, especially because I wasn't ready to at the time that it was happening. So this thing kept happening and I kept trying to avoid it and kept pushing it away. And then the reality was I had to become my mother's essential caregiver. And so stepping away from everything I spent years building, it was making me step into a new role that I wasn't prepared for, wasn't willing to step into. And so I was very angry and frustrated until it started to change my life. And it started to help me see through a total different lens, where I started to learn compassion in a different way. I started to learn what the words transformation really meant. So I went from being this career hungry person ready to drive and strive and turned into being my mother's caregiver. And life was never the same on the other end of the spectrum.
That makes sense.
Still isn't, because I'm still a caregiver.
Mm-hmm. And before we get into a little bit more about why you're here tonight, can you just explain a bit about the caregiving you're doing for your mom, please?
Sure. So my mother lives with, was always living with bipolar manic depressive disorder, which is why there was a lot of push pull and wanting to avoid her behavioral outbursts. And then eventually this became a mixed dementia, and that's because she was first diagnosed with vascular dementia, which eventually became early onset Alzheimer's, which her last and final doctor visit was a confirmation that she was living with frontal temporal dementia. So she's got a mixed form and definitely cannot live on her own.
Okay. And I do want to give you an opportunity in our second segment to really do some education around dementia and Alzheimer's, because there's a lot of terms there already that you've mentioned that I'm thinking, oh, I really don't know if I understand the difference between those things, and I'm sure audience members don't. But I want to give you, because it's a caregiver show, I want to give you the opportunity first to tell us about your book, because you're here today to promote the book, The Proactive Caregiver. And I love the title. What motivated you to write the book and to title it that way?
First of all, let me just say, thank you for saying that. I'm amazed to actually hear that, because when I originally wrote it, what was clear to me was I wrote this and titled this The Proactive Caregiver because that's what I became. I had to become proactive. I was tired of always reacting to every situation that this world of bipolar and dementia and just being human in general, the responses and always feeling like, okay, now when's the next shoe going to drop? Now when's the next doctor's appointment going to reveal more bad news? So this book, I was so excited to finally get it done, because it was really a process of that transformation that I spoke of, birthing the story and really pulling it out. I did it in a way that I wanted to help others learn from it so they can avoid a lot of the problems that we were hit head on with and how it destroyed our family. But once it was out and published, I found a lot of people saying, proactive, what does that mean?
Really?
It was so frustrating, because to me, it was clear, because I'm an accountant. And so reviewing financial statements and the projections and the trending, you always want to look, how can we be proactive and change this and stop this from happening? Or how can we get ahead of the game and make better results for the next quarter or the next year? And so it was so clear to me that I wanted to be the proactive. And there are so many caregivers that are so overwhelmed and in this stressful mode that the idea of being proactive just doesn't happen.
Well, and it's funny, I probably understood the term because I've spent my entire life being reactive and I'm a very reactive emotional person, and oftentimes being told you need to dial it down a little bit and you need to figure out some steps for being proactive. So when I saw the title, I was like, yay, there's going to actually be some direction here to help me manage some of this reactivity I have. So
yes, and that's funny when you said, what people say, what does proactive mean? I had to chuckle, like, I never heard of that term. What would it mean to be proactive? Could you explain it? So I think a lot of people feel that way. And initially, I thought the proactive caregiver, what resonated with me first is, what are some of the steps that people in general can take? Because one thing that we talk about a lot is caregiving impacts just about everybody under the sun in some capacity. Exactly. Always going back to the Rosalind Carter quote, that I'm not sure if I'm getting it right, but either, you know, you will be a caregiver, you are a caregiver, mm-hmm. you will need a caregiver, you will become a caregiver. Exactly. So I thought, wow, this is really great, you know, for the general public, because I think it would be so helpful for people to give this thought, because it's going to impact them at some point. But, you know, what is your recipe for creating proactive caregivers, and why do you want to see more of them?
The need is there. Basically, I want to see more of them because dementia is on the rise. It's becoming an epidemic. It is the way we have learned to live. And unless we become more proactive in our lives, it's not going to change quickly, or at least not enough to stop this growing epidemic. And so to me, to help caregivers understand what it means to be proactive, just as we said, we wanted to stop reacting to situations. So the flip side of it is learning how to become more attentive, learning how to become more compassionate, and also even learning how to be more organized. There are certain things that, you know, parents understand this. When we have kids, you don't have to stop and think, oh, did I make their school lunch, or I'll just do it later. I'll just wait till the morning and I'll get it done before. And then the morning comes and it's chaos, because it always is, getting kids up and ready and out the door. And you're scrambling to get things done last minute. And you say, next time I'm going to make it tonight, so I'm not doing that tomorrow morning. So it's learning how to prepare and anticipate and put measures in place, so you're not always reacting to life, that you're actually prepared. And in that preparation, you're also learning how to take better care of yourself. That was my main goal, because in putting certain measures in place for my mother, knowing going forward, okay, if she's living with dementia, and there are seven stages, seventh one obviously being death, and she is now in the fourth stage, from the fourth to the seventh, there's a lot that I need to be prepared for and anticipate happening. It wasn't just the chaos of medications and doctor's appointments and trying to help her find ways of being healthy and postpone some of the later stages. It was understanding how I go about doing this, and then how do I prevent this from happening to me? Because this is a moment where I realize I need to be selfish in enough of a sense that I need to prevent this from happening to me. So that proactive part of it was putting steps in place to make it a little bit easier, to help reduce a lot of the stress and the overwhelm. But life always happens in one way or another. But when you put these steps and have these measures in place, it's doesn't have to be as complex as it can come, or and as it has come for other caregivers that are blindsided, didn't see certain things coming, or they saw it coming but didn't understand what it really meant until it was too late.
I love how you said being selfish. And whenever you say the word selfish, to me, it sounds like a bad thing, right?
Right.
But you have to be able to take care of yourself. And I think as a caregiver, that's something that we just don't do. So I love that you have that in there.
Yes, definitely.
And before I ask you our next question and we go to break, I just want to clarify. So with the proactive piece, you're saying I have to be proactive in understanding my new role as a caregiver. But in your case, as a caregiver to someone with dementia, I also have to be proactive in understanding my ability to prevent dementia. Am I correct in understanding that there's multiple layers going on here?
Yes, you are. It's double-sided. So you're proactive for your loved one and you're proactive for yourself.
Okay. And you're proactive for yourself as a caregiver, but also as someone preventing dementia because you're caregiving for a family member who you're genetically and biologically connected to.
Yes.
Okay.
Exactly.
Awesome. Okay. Exactly. So as I was reading your book, that's what I was teasing out, but I wanted to make sure I was understanding it all. And we didn't even explain to you, our audience knows, but we are caregivers to adult children with disabilities. So we haven't had to face, both of my parents have passed on, but neither one of them had dementia and I was their long distance caregiver. So I just am trying to wrap my head around the role that you're having. So it's interesting. Before we go to break, I want to ask you about on your website, I saw that you do speaking arrangements too. And I really was intrigued by the keynote that was titled The Caregiver's Trinity. Can you explain in just a couple moments here about what's the primary message in that speech, please?
Absolutely. So one of my proactive measures is to meditate. And one day I was meditating and I will say this, I received this download and it was this concept that came to mind, Caregiver's Trinity. And I thought that's kind of odd. Because to me, the first Trinity that comes to mind is the Father, Son, and Holy Ghost.
Right.
So how do I translate this? Well, there are certain things that caregivers need to learn to live by in order to have that healthier, happier life, to not only prevent dementia, but to enjoy life in general. And so those were areas that I speak about, which relate to their financial aspects, the lifestyle aspects, and their spirituality.
Okay, so that's the Trinity, the Father, Son, and Holy Ghost. Financial, spiritual, what was the middle one again?
And lifestyle.
And lifestyle. Excellent. We've been talking with Jessica Cannon here about all her great work, her theory of the caregiver's Trinity, Trinity, and we'll be back in just a moment to discuss more about dementia and her book. You are listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show. I'm Kristen, and I'm here with my co-host and our guest, Jessica Cannon. And we've already started out with a really fascinating layered conversation about her book, The Proactive Caregiver, all that's involved in being proactive, and in her case, particularly being proactive to a mother with dementia. And so in this next segment, she spends a lot of her time in the book, and I can just tell that there's a great deal of motivation in all of your work, Jessica, that's been related to helping people, especially yourself, understand dementia, your mother's dementia, but also researching whether there are steps you could take to try and prevent that same path for yourself. Am I correct?
Right. Yes, you are.
Okay. So can you please tell us more about that motivation, what you've learned, and what you're doing to prevent dementia? Because it was a whole new approach to it, again, when I started reading the book than I've ever seen before.
Interesting. So the motivation behind it started out to be a little bit vain. I went to doctor's appointments with my mom one after the other, and the first neurologist she was seeing was a gentleman that was close to retirement, one foot in, one foot out.
Sure.
And his responses just didn't line up, didn't settle with me, didn't feel comfortable. I was like, surely you can see this woman is not fine. He was pretty much saying she's fine. She could still keep driving. And I'm thinking, no, this is not happening. So I got a second opinion, found another neurologist. And one of the first few things this neurologist asked me was, have you been tested? I was offended at the question. Mm. It infuriated me. And I didn't really know why. Mm-hmm. But the idea of the dementia is solely genetic really bothered me. So I told her no, and I had no intentions of being tested ever because it is my responsibility to take care of my body. Sure. And I don't believe that just because my mother has dementia that I will too. And I became stubborn and I wanted to prove otherwise. So that really lit a fire underneath me of kind of proving to people why dementia is not solely genetic. Because everything I was researching for other caregivers to, you know, every time I met a caregiver, whether it was in a support group or otherwise in the grocery store, conversation sparked.
Oh yeah.
The conversation somehow went to genetics and it really started to bother me. And then I started thinking, well, you know, if your great grandfather lived a certain way and he taught your grandfather a certain, you know, indirectly, indirectly, and then your grandfather taught your father and taught you, then apparently it's not really genetics that we're doing. We're just passing down traditions and habits.
Interesting.
That are harmful. Interesting. So I had to dig into this further because I wanted to prove myself right. And I dug my heels in. And the more I read about dementia, all different forms and the top ones that are most spoken about, the more it confirmed and the more I felt vindicated and the more I started finding doctors even claiming that food is our medicine, that we are doing this to ourselves, that we don't have to live this way, that dementia can be prevented. And I thought, there you go. I'm going to run with that. And then all of the dots started to connect with mom and I started seeing how I could prevent it.
Interesting. I have a question for you. When you say the doctor said, did you get tested? Mm-hmm. I have to be honest. I am intrigued by dementia. My grandmother passed of it and I still am not being proactive. I still feel like there is a lot I need to learn. What does that entail? Do you know being tested for it?
So right now they can't really just go, you can't go into a doctor's office and be tested for dementia. I mean, really, the term dementia is an umbrella term. It's what scientists use to describe how the brain deteriorates and how the nerve endings break and the brain is basically slowly dying. Now, where the brain is dying is the form of dementia that they've been able to label. That's why Alzheimer's is talked about the most, but there's many different types. So the tests that they would run are very detailed, where you would have PET scans, MRIs. In some cases, you could have your genetics history done so they can see what genes are present or not. And that's something I didn't want to have done because I felt it was kind of a cop-out in a sense, just to make assumptions.
Sure.
Yeah.
And it can almost be like a self-fulfilling prophecy, right? So now I know that I'm, you know, loaded up with a brain that's going to disproportionately put me on the path to dementia than somebody who doesn't have these genes. And so now that means I can do X, Y, or Z, or I can stop doing A, B, and C, basically leading this healthier lifestyle that you're talking about.
Exactly.
What's one thing that you changed in the way you were living? I you referenced food, so I'm guessing that's a primary place where you thought that there could be a big change.
Yes, the one thing that I changed was the food that I ate and when I ate them. So I started learning about fasting. I also started learning about the foods in a way that it wasn't just what I was eating, it was what I was craving and why I was craving these kind of foods. And that led me into understanding how our gut causes a lot of the craving, our emotional status. And so then I had to really think, okay, so I'm not going to eat a meal just because I'm hungry. I want to eat a meal because I need to feed my brain. And I started to look at it that way. So learning about the types of foods, what we get from the foods, the vitamins, the minerals, what does my brain need? What does my heart need? What does, you know, my body in general for energy, muscle, mass, everything. I started to break it down that way. And I kind of geeked out with a lot of the details.
Well, and I don't want to steal, you know, the content of the book, right? We want people to go read the book. And so why don't you tell everybody where they can find the book?
Absolutely. So if they go to my website, first of all, proactivecaregiver.com, you can get a signed copy from me. But otherwise, you can go on to Amazon and any of the Ingram Spark outlets, which are like Barnes & Noble, you can find the book there as well.
Okay, great. And the book, again, is called The Proactive Caregiver by Jessica Cannon. And we'll be back in just a moment to talk a little bit more with her about her journey.
Empowered Caregiver Show. I'm Liza, and I'm here with my co-host Kristen and Jessica Cannon, speaker, author, and caregiver advocate. And we've been talking about dementia. And you know, with dementia becoming a worldwide epidemic, why aren't we seeing more discussions about it? And what are some of the early signs?
Preliminary. There we go.
Thank you.
Yes. We're not seeing so much of this, and it's not talked about enough because, quite honestly, people don't recognize the need to go to the doctor until something's obviously wrong. And we don't notice things are obviously wrong or abnormal until people are actually in stage four. Then you're in a position of, if you act quickly enough, you can not necessarily reverse the remainder stages, but you can significantly slow them down. And so it's not talked about a lot because dementia isn't thoroughly understood. When you hear the word dementia, I think most people, the first thing that comes to mind is Alzheimer's, because that's the one that's spoken about the most.
Right.
But even when you say Alzheimer's, the first thing people think of is memory.
Right.
But it's far more than that.
Can you speak to that for a second? Because you're right. All I think about is memory and, oh, that they don't recognize people anymore. And it's heart-wrenching.
Right. Because that is what we see in movies.
Right.
That is what is talked about. That is what actually gets people to notice something's not right. They don't remember the day of the week. They don't remember the time of the day. They don't remember something you told them an hour ago, which by then, their memory is shortening. Short-term memory is what goes first, which is why this is what we notice. You know, I told you that. I said that. I told you we were going to the doctor's office. You knew we were going on Tuesday. Oh, I forgot. Well, we would dismiss it and say, oh, you're right. You did tell me. I've just been so busy. I forgot to put it on the calendar. So we didn't dismiss these things. And there's always, and which is what happened with my mother. There was always something that you could say. She didn't have a good dinner. She didn't sleep good last night. She didn't take her medicines this morning. She didn't drink her coffee. I mean, We could find all kinds of reasons to dismiss. And so we do until, unfortunately, enough of those symptoms happen all at once. Then you're like, okay, something's clearly wrong.
So if there's these seven stages and you know, you really don't, it's not really on your radar until like stage four, I guess my question is, how early can we discover this? Because when most of the time when you think dementia, Alzheimer's, you think the older population. I know that there's some early onset, but you know, as far as being proactive goes, if there's 1 through 7, what age do you start looking for symptoms are, you know, stage number one, if that makes sense?
That is an excellent question. And that is also part of my motivation, because when I started to look into this information for my mother, looking back and trying to backstep things, her first couple of signs that started to become more obvious to us, she was in her mid 40s.
Wow.
I'm 47 now. So that really scared me a lot. And so the idea of her early symptoms, those stage two, stage three, happening in her mid 40s. By the time she was in her mid 50s and late 50s, she was already in stage five.
Wow.
So the earlier, which is why I really, really want caregivers to understand the need to be proactive, because this is where our lifestyle habits come in. This is where someone eating improperly or smoking or heavily drinking or all these things that add up over the years, your brain is deteriorating through that time period.
And is that are those covered in your book? Do you go through the stages, the symptoms? Yes. Okay.
In chapter 3, I cover the stages, and I actually give examples of what my mother was, how she was living, what she was doing, things she was saying, her behaviors. And so just to give an idea and to also show an example of how some of the stuff seems normal. And if you pay closer attention to these details, you would say, huh, that's interesting. I'm going to make a mental note of it. So if it happens again in the next couple of days, you know, you can start seeing a pattern and start comparing details.
Yeah, and mentioning the book in the various chapters, you do have one titled Creating a Cultural Shift. When I read that chapter, I was really struck by how much you want to see shifted in our culture. Can you speak more to what you think needs to be shifted and how you intend to encourage those shifts?
Yes. A lot of what I was noticing for myself is things like marketing. I really want the way products are marketed to families, children, to change. I understand a lot of it has to be done. Look, as an accountant, I always looked at the bottom line. We want to see numbers growing. We want to see income growing. We want to see that trend line going up.
Yep.
But at what it cost, at what expense. So when you see commercials, for example, that say part of a healthy breakfast, and you've got this bowl of sugar cereal, and there's a glass of orange juice, which is more cereal or more sugar for that child.
Yep.
And maybe an apple or toast with butter on the side. And so that part of it just gives you that idea. And I hear other caregivers say all the time when they ask, what should I eat? What should I avoid? What should this, that? Well, I thought that was healthy. Well, I thought that was good. Well, yes, because that's how it's marketed to us. So a lot of that cultural shift comes in how we present things, because honestly, there's things in the US that are banned. I'm sorry, that things that are abroad in the European countries that are banned that are still allowed here.
Yep.
There's a difference between eating gluten-free here versus gluten-free overseas.
I did not know that.
Yes. And I'm learning this now because that's one of my proactive approaches. I have found out that I have to eat gluten-free. So this cultural shift comes from changing our lifestyle habits, and it starts with us and teaching our children so that they will teach their children and so on and so forth. Instead of taking the family dishes, for example, that it's passed down, my dad, my mother and father used to, they're Puerto Rican. And so the Puerto Rican's cuisine, my dad taught me how to cook it. And so I learned and I cooked it in early years of my marriage. And I gained the weight and I started going through the patterns of my parents. And I realized, you know what, I need to stop having fried pork chops with fried plantains and the rice and beans. And it just was, it was sustainable at a certain time of scarcity, but not health-wise for the long term.
Right, exactly. That's the interesting part too, when you look at the history behind why foods are part of different cultures and different cuisines, right? And what was going on in those countries. But we could talk about history and food and all that kind of stuff forever. And I do want to not lose track of the fact that we're trying to talk about your experience and your wisdom on caregiving.
Definitely.
So every show, we like to ask powerful questions, which are those that push you to go inward and reflect on your personal experiences and thoughts. And so we've got a couple for you. One is, you've been able to teach some of these classes and share your book. What's one of your favorite stories about a caregiver you've met in your work?
My favorite story was coming in contact with a caregiver that enlightened me on our need for human sexuality. To put this in a very delicate matter, my mother living with dementia has affected her mind, has affected her judgment and other areas of her life. However, it has not affected her need as a human being, as a sexual creature. And so when my mother was having some behavioral problems that was definitely escalating, her main caregivers in the facility that she was living at the time, their response was to have her seen and have her medicated. Mm. Now, this caregiver that I was working with explained to me the need for release, that this behavior was because there was a lot of sexual tension building up.
Right.
And it took us down a turn that at first, many years ago, I was like, this is my hard, fast stop line. I will not pass this limitation. And then I found myself seeing my mother as a human being in this way, struggling. And even my mother telling me herself, you know, the furnace may be, how did she put it? The ashes in the furnace may be there, but they're still burning. And I thought, okay, that's a lot more than I ever wanted to take on.
Right.
But it really enlightened me in the fact that how we start to treat people differently once we learn that they have dementia. And this caregiver made, her name is Laura, made a huge difference for me and helped me see that we need to treat the whole body and not just respond to behaviors.
Well, and this will make you feel better. Before we get to the next topic, I just want to throw out there that my adult daughter also has a lot of those kind of burning embers, and she's 21 and cognitively she's more like a 6-year-old. So it has been really challenging to figure out how do we help her natural body and her whole self be expressed in a way that is safe for her, but also gives her that whole life experience. So I appreciate what you're saying.
It's needed. It's very necessary.
Mm-hmm. That makes total sense. And I know that this whole thing has been a journey for you, and between the book and everything that you've done, you've really ran with it. What is one thing that you're most proud of in your proactive caregiver journey or experience, or your personal experience?
The thing that I'm most proud about is looking back and seeing who I used to be and loving myself of who I am now. I could see that although I came to this journey very angry and upset because I blamed my mother for a lot of mismanaged care, but it has taught me a lot about compassion, and it also taught me how to be more compassionate with myself. And so I'm proud of being able to open up and speak about some of the issues that plagued our family and that caused a lot of the emotional PTSD and emotional trauma that led to why she never cared for herself and saw the self-worth in the first place. So I was able to I had a childhood experience that was sexual abuse. And my mother related, she had a similar situation. And so being able to speak about these things in the stories and bring that to light, it was a very huge accomplishment. And so it kind of added to the transformation for me to really love myself for a change.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. Yeah, that's wonderful.
It is.
Thank you for sharing that.
I was just going to thank you for that too. I mean, I appreciate you taking that risk to be vulnerable and doing that also in the book, right? Because the more that people are able to do that, the more we're able to bring these topics and people that are experiencing all of this out of the shadows so that people can recognize that they're not alone, that other people have had this experience, that people can be resilient through all of these different things that have caused PTSD that then get confounded by your biology, confounded by the crazy market we have, like you were describing before, yes, with the messages and the actual products. I mean, it's a complicated world that we're navigating. And I just appreciate when people are able to put themselves out there and be vulnerable so that we can build a community and connect with one another.
Yes.
So we've got a couple minutes left, and one of our favorite powerful questions is to ask you, what are three things you would like to say to all caregivers or to our audience? I probably can predict at least one of them, but I would love to give you the microphone to give you one more chance to get your message across.
Definitely. So one of the main things, well, three of them, but the first one is every detail matters.
Oh.
And I say this because of how much I dismissed. How much my family dismissed before. Those little details, when you look back and reflect on them, wow, how much we looked over. Let's see, another one is, and my mother is still teaching me to this day, actions speak louder than words. Always. When someone is telling you, I'm fine, I'm fine, I'm fine, leave me alone, I'm fine. But their body and the environment they're living in looks otherwise, their actions are speaking louder than their words. Mm-hmm. And it's easy to walk away and just say, fine, I'm just not going to deal with it. Because I did that until I couldn't walk away anymore.
Right.
And it makes life difficult when you actually have to stand in it and face it.
Yeah.
So another thing is, and the main thing, the top 100% thing, if you don't remember anything else this entire time, self-care is not selfish.
Love it. We'll be back in just a moment to wrap up some of our final thoughts with you, Jessica. Thank you. This is the Empowered Caregiver Show, and my name is Kristen, and apparently I don't know how to read cues around music and entering into shows. I apologize, everybody. I am just so excited to come back to my conversation with Jessica. If you were listening to us right before the break, we're talking with Jessica Cannon. She is a caregiver advocate, a writer, a speaker, and she's been here talking with us about a new book she wrote called The Proactive Caregiver. And the question we asked her right before break is, what are three things that you would like to tell all caregivers? And I predicted she was going to say self-care, because first of all, that's what lots of people say. And second of all, it's really clear, Jessica, from your book, from this conversation, that you're really prioritizing your own self-care, which is important, right? And that's the only way we're going to get through this whole journey of being caregivers to the various people in our life, whether it's our parents, whether it's spouses, whether it's kids and family members with disabilities. And what I didn't predict, though, and it was a question I wanted to get to, was your first one where you said, tell us again about the details, please. What is that?
Every detail matters.
Right. And that's how you sign your autographed book.
Yes.
And it's funny, as a teacher, I usually credit myself in being able to kind of figure out what the message is. Every detail matters. And I was like, what is she trying to tell us? And so far in the book, I'm still like, where does the every detail matters come through? So I want to give you the microphone one more time and give you a chance to really, I think that's a unique message from you. Many of the things that we talk about kind of keep coming up as themes. That is not one I've heard yet in this year of being on this podcast. So please tell us what you mean by every detail matters.
Absolutely. So this is something that I realized I had to stop dismissing mom's behaviors and start actually paying attention to them. That was that one side of it. But then in my own personal journey of this, I had to stop dismissing my cravings even. Mm. What was I craving and what was I trying to fill my body with is that empty gaping hole where I'm stuffing my face with chocolate chip cookies as my one and only vice. Mm-hmm. Main vice.
I know. But I get what you're saying. Mine was the chocolate chip cookie dough. I wasn't even waiting for them to be baked and I was shoving my face full to get that gaping hole full, right?
Yeah. But when you're doing that, instead of wondering, why am I eating this? Why am I craving this? What is my emotion? What was I feeling that led me to need this comfort food? Mm-hmm. I always had times in month and close, we would order certain food and I would always get the food with this giant chocolate chip cookie because that's what made me feel better. Mm-hmm. And that was something that growing up, that those little treats and the little meals and all the stuff with my dad or my mom, those are certain things that were provided to make you feel better. So I had some programming in there that mm-hmm. cookies equaled
good feelings.
Feeling better.
Yeah,
better.
Feeling better.
Moods, yep. Uplifting moods. Mm-hmm. And so every detail matters. When we start understanding our own personal programming and why it's there, why it exists, then we can understand how to break it down and how to change it, mm-hmm. which also leads to how to create that cultural shift.
Right. Oh, that's fabulous. Every detail matters when we're looking at and paying attention to the person who's our care recipient, particularly if we're dealing with dementia. Every detail matters in paying attention to ourselves and how we need to take care of what we're putting inside ourselves, how we're treating ourselves, and what we're feeling.
Exactly.
Jessica, what a great way to end this conversation. You have been really interesting to speak with tonight. I can't wait to finish the book. It's a dense, good, detailed book. Thank you for writing it. And thank you for giving us time tonight.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yep. We look forward to talking with you again.
Definitely.
Okay, great. All right, Liza. Wow. We had a really interesting conversation there, didn't we? What's something that stands out to you?
There's a lot. You know, I've said it before and I'll say it again and I'll keep saying it. The world of dementia and Alzheimer's is fascinating to me. I love the work that Jessica's doing and, you know, trying to give a voice, a microphone to this because it is becoming an epidemic. And for what I've learned today is there are things that we can do. We can be proactive and there are steps that we can take. And I would say, you know, that level of every detail matters, you know, creating that personal self-awareness when you have habits, when you do things, why is that happening?
Right. Oh, I like that.
What about you? What was your greatest takeaway or what have you learned?
Well, there's a lot I learned. This isn't my greatest takeaway, but I thought of it early on and I'm like, make a note that that's what you want to share in your reflection. The organization. And when early on in the conversation, Jessica was talking about how that is a good tool to use as a caregiver. And she was talking about how we knew that as parents, but we oftentimes don't follow it, right? The idea that I'm going to make the sandwich or I'm going to make the kids lunch the night before because there's always chaos in the morning. And that if we take that organizational approach when we're into our caregiving, we can reduce so much of the stress for the care recipient and ourselves. Wow. I like needed to practice that 3 hours ago. I needed to practice that this morning. I needed to practice that last night. I mean, I just keep getting annoyed with everybody in my house, particularly Nicole. And it's all because I'm not organized, right? The Christmas decorations are literally, they look like they've been exploded and puked all over our house because I thought, oh, I should start in the living room. And then all of a sudden I'm taking care of the bag that Nicole brought back from Seattle. And then I'm angry because there's now all of a sudden dirty clothes all over the kitchen. And I'm like, why are the dirty clothes in the kitchen? Right. And it's all because I haven't stopped, taken a breath, and gotten organized and done one thing at a time. And so we're just living in the swirl of caregiving chaos and a lot of angst from mom. So it was a good reminder for how to go home tonight and how to approach Nicole and caregiving tomorrow and just how to make sure that I keep prioritizing organization.
Yeah, makes sense. Honestly, when that story came up, it made me think about today. I am traveling for work. I have my college age son with me. He was my helper, but he wanted to hang out at the hotel. I came back at 5 and on my way back, I'm like, I didn't feed this kid today. Oh. Like he was fed. I don't want social services coming up today at my house. I have tons of food at the hotel, healthy food, apples, oranges, grapes. He's doing fine.
Right.
He's got a cell phone. He knows how to reach me. So I just want to put that disclaimer out there. Okay. But I literally was driving back to our hotel around 6 o'clock thinking I did not give this kid one formal meal today. Mm-hmm. That there is a lot that we can do to be proactive and to make our lives easier and those that we care for.
Exactly. So this has been a really great conversation. In our last few moments tonight, I just want to promote some breaking news. We are moving to a new time. Starting next week, we are going to be live Wednesdays from 7 to 8 here on 92.7. Again, we're going to be live on Wednesday evenings from 7 to 8 here on 92.7. But our recordings can always be found on the Civic Media app, Apple Podcast, Spotify, and our website, theempoweredcaregivercommunity.com. And we are looking to find sponsors. We're looking to recognize some of our awesome caregivers around the state. And so if you're interested in connecting with us, please find us on Facebook or at empoweredcaregivercommunity.com. We know that caregiving can be overwhelming and exhausting. So that's why we want to end each show with a positive note. You got this, peeps, and together we are stronger. So stay connected to the Empowered Caregiver Community. Good night.